Sean, we're less than a week away. It's Thursday, October 5th. And on Tuesday, there's a triple header on ESPN to open the regular season. We're finally going to get there. This preseason, it's been good. Some news stories, as we talked about last week, they've happened, Sean. Some compelling stuff. But you know what? We're almost there. We're almost at the start of the regular season, and I'm pumped.
Now it's time to be pumped, Dan. Preseason's over. Everybody's had their trial runs. New players have shown up. Lineups are almost ready. We can start focusing on the regular season, and it's going to be an epic regular season. I mean, there's so many storylines going on. You know, can Edmonton finally win? Can Vegas repeat? What's going to happen to the Bruins? Is Florida even going to make the playoffs? You know, we've discussed that numerous times. So the storylines are unbelievable, and we haven't even talked about Connor Bedard, who's the most anticipated rookie since Connor McDavid. So, and that's part of that first night triple header. So now I'm excited.
Well, we're going to talk about Connor Bedard. We're going to talk about trophy trackers. We're going to do some predictions. We're going to talk about the Oilers. You're going to hear from Leon Draisaitl on this episode. You're going to hear from Connor Bedard in this episode. But before we do all that, let's just do a little bit of current news right now. It was only yesterday, that would be Wednesday, that I was at the Board of Governors meeting in Manhattan and spoke to Gary Bettman. The Board of Governors, they meet before the season starts every year. And listen, good stuff's happening here. This league is looking up, right? The salary cap is going to go up, could go up to $87 to $88 million next season, Gary Bettman said, because the escrow share that the players owe the owners is down to less than $50 million. It will be paid off finally, and we're going to get back to normal. The cap's going to go up. Revenues are north of $6 billion, 6.2, maybe as high as 6.7 this season, depending on the Canadian dollar. State of the league, Sean, it's looking good as we're starting another season here, and that is good for business, and that's good for fan interest. That's good for the National Hockey League at large. And that's really what my takeaway was from covering that Board of Governors meeting. There were some other storylines, no question, and I want to get into them a little bit, but that was my takeaway, that once again, the state of this league is looking really good.
I think vibrant is the word you're looking for. We're out of COVID times. You know, things have gotten back to normal. We're starting our season at a normal time, just about. We've slowly gotten back to where we were before, and that's being reflected in the economy of the game. And you look at all the numbers, and they're fantastic. The television numbers, our television partners, our national partners, the excitement around ESPN and TNT, the European games, the games in Australia, just the footprint continues to grow for this league.
Yeah, we don't. I mean, it's not like we don't want to sound like shills for the National Hockey League, even though we work for the NHL, obviously, and this is an NHL podcast, but we're just giving you the numbers, right? I mean, the Ottawa Senators sale, that was nearly $1 billion for that team to sell. So franchise values are way up. In fact, Gary Bettman, in talking about potential, and I use the word potential, and it's not on the agenda, expansion, because they do get expressions of interest, Gary Bettman said, about expansion. You got Atlanta, Houston, Salt Lake, and obviously Quebec City. They're all interested in having National Hockey League teams either again or for the first time. Franchise values are way up. So he was asked, could you imagine what an expansion fee would be this time around? And his only answer was a lot. And he said it twice. So that's another sign of business being really good. Michael Anlauer was at his first Board of Governors meetings yesterday, Wednesday, as the owner, the majority owner of the Ottawa Senators. That sale obviously closed. He had some interesting things to say, looking ahead to the future of an arena downtown, and wanting that and pushing that issue, and understanding it could be 3, 4, 5 years down the road before the Senators do move downtown. But just Michael Anlauer being there and what that franchise sold for, what he purchased it for, is another sign of how business is. Bill Haslam is going to be the new owner. He's in line here to be the new owner of the Nashville Predators. Ownership in general is in a good state right now. Further signs of progress, of growth, of being out of those COVID times.
Yeah, and why would you put a cap on what a new franchise would be worth? I'm not putting a cap on what my house is worth. If you want to pay me $1 million for my little hovel here, feel free. You never say this is what it's worth. What's it worth to you, right?
It's true.
That's good business. So, I mean, it's a great time to be involved in sports. I think, and you know, as we discussed, the league's healthy, and we're at a point now where normalcy has returned to a good degree. And I think you just look at the opportunities that are out there for promotion and for visibility and for everything else. Why wouldn't sports-minded individuals be interested in investing in this product?
Yeah, and two other takeaways from me from the Board of Governors before we get into talking. We're going to talk Pacific Division first here, and then you're going to hear from Leon Draisaitl a little later on. You're going to hear from Connor Bedard as we go through the other divisions, give some predictions and what have you. But two other takeaways for me. Well, three other takeaways. Number one, the next Board of Governors meeting in December is going to be in Seattle. It's an IOU from Gary Bettman to the people in Seattle. He said when they were coming in that they would have a board meeting there so they could show off Climate Pledge Arena. They could show off everything to their new partners. Then COVID hit. So the next board meeting is going to be in Seattle. I'm going to get to go. My first time in Seattle. So I'm looking forward to that. Number one, David Blitzer, who is the majority partner of the New Jersey Devils, a co-owner there with Josh Harris. David Blitzer is new to the executive committee of the Board of Governors. He replaces Rocky Wirtz, who is now the late former chairman of the Chicago Blackhawks. And Sean, I think that's a nice feather in the cap for the New Jersey Devils. I think that's a big deal because it's a sign of power, number one, and it's a sign of understanding how strong your ownership situation is, that your governor is now part of a 10-member, it's a select group, a 10-member executive committee. The other owners on there, we're talking about guys like Ted Leonsis, Mark Chipman, Craig Leopold is on there, Jeremy Jacobs, Jeff Vinnick. These are powerful owners in the league with a lot of sway and a lot of say. And to have somebody from the Devils that, they had a really good season last year. Their ownership is stable. It's looking good. They're making a lot of upgrades at Prudential Center as well. And now they have a guy in there who's going to be a voice for them in a select group of an executive committee. I also think that's a big deal for the Devils.
Of course it is. I mean, anytime you can exert your power, it's a huge deal. And, you know, I just want to circle back to Seattle. We were talking about expansion. Again, just look at the expansion that the league has undergone in the last 7 years. Vegas has won a cup. Seattle made the playoffs in their second year. Their business is beyond booming. The interest is unbelievable, right? So the rules are different. You come into the league as a competitive member now. You don't come in as an also-ran, which was the case for countless expansion teams. So now you come in and you're competitive right away. You can sell your product to your fans. There's no patience required like there was for a lot of teams that came into this league. So, yeah, I think for the Devils, this is great. It continues that narrative of them coming back to the forefront, you know, where they were in the late 90s and the early 2000s, but even more on the business side. They were never a business power, and now they are. It's all good in New Jersey, especially with the product on the ice.
Yeah, but you were talking about Seattle and Vegas, the last two expansion teams. It's a perfect segue, Sean, to talk about what we need to get to next. They open the regular season against each other on Tuesday at T-Mobile Arena. They'll play in the Winter Classic on January 1st in Seattle at T-Mobile Park. So there's a couple of pops for T-Mobile right there. You know, kind of interesting. The last two expansion teams, obviously, you got the Stanley Cup champions, and the Kraken made the playoffs last year, won a round, huge for them, an improvement of 40 points. They're both in the Pacific Division. You're going to hear from Leon Draisaitl, too, who's also in the Pacific Division. I'm assuming you have Vegas in the playoffs, Sean. Do you have Seattle in the playoffs too?
I don't.
No. Ooh. They were borderline for me. They were a borderline pick for me. I was torn because the question I had was, can they do it again the way they did it last year with so much reliance on their depth? But their depth is still pretty strong. It's actually quite strong, if not better, because you got a guy like Matty Beniers, who should be a better player, you know, now after winning the Calder Trophy last year. We'll talk about the Calder Trophy later on, by the way, and our favorites there. I like Seattle. I think they can do it again in that fashion. They don't have the superstar, but if they can defend the net and they can get the depth scoring, I like them to make the playoffs. They were a pick for me. I have them as the first wild card in. Vegas to me is a team that I have winning the division in the Pacific Division because honestly, I mean, it's pretty much the same team other than Riley Smith, who was a big part, but the same team from last year. Seattle is a lot of the same too. I have them as the first wild card in, And kind of in between the two of them, I have Edmonton and LA. So it's a lot of the same for me in the Pacific, except the one exception is Vancouver is a team I have also making the playoffs. Pacific Northwest, they're loving me now.
I think Calgary's a better team, so they got to fight off Calgary. I think Vancouver, speaking of the Pacific Northwest, is a better team. I think they're closer to what they were at the end of last year than what they were at the beginning of last year. And I think Nashville's a better team. So you got two teams in the Pacific that they got to beat out, and you have a team in the wild card that wasn't involved last year that you have to beat out. I don't think they've made any improvements. I think they're the same team, if not a little bit worse, because everybody around them got better. So it's going to be tough for them.
Yeah, but if they're the same team, they could be, and it may be a little bit worse, they were a 100-point team last year. What are they, 96-point team, 97-point team? That still gets them in. That still does get them in if they don't drop too much and they're the same. Again, it comes down to the depth scoring. We'll see. I mean, I'm curious. The start will tell us a lot for a lot of these teams, especially some of these bubble teams. Seattle is one of them. Vancouver's one of them. Calgary's one of them. Edmonton is not, but I still think the start's going to tell us a lot about Edmonton. You're going to hear from Leon Draisaitl here in a minute. But Sean, my thought on the Oilers in this division, as we just talked about Seattle, Vancouver, there's a lot of good teams in the Pacific Division, right? I think the Oilers are, again, a team that's going to be a really good regular season team. But then it's going to come down to, you know, other guys stepping up. That's really where it is. Other guys stepping up in the playoffs beyond McDavid and Draisaitl and guys, you know, staying in the lineup. Like, losing Darnell Nurse was not a good thing for them, you know, in that series against the Golden Knights. And their goaltending, it's an obvious question. It's a question for a lot of different teams. I can't argue with the Oilers being a good regular season team, but again, it's one of those things. It's almost like the Toronto Maple Leafs in the East, right? I mean, like, you fully expect them to go and have a good season, be a 100-plus point team, have elite scorers, and then it really comes down to what they do in the playoffs. Edmonton is in that boat. Toronto's in that boat.
Yeah, and I think when you hear from Leon Draisaitl, who we'll have on in a couple of minutes, I think more and more it's sinking in. Like, before, I think there was a little bit of lip service paid to, oh, we need to be a 200-foot team to be good in the playoffs because they were so good offensively. I think, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, you need to be a little better in the defensive zone. And you say, yeah, well, we're going to go keep doing what we're doing. But, you know, in talking to Leon at Player Media Tour, it's very clear for him and for Connor McDavid and therefore for the rest of the leadership core that they need to learn how to not lose. Forget blowing teams out now. Like, there's nothing in it. We had this conversation on the podcast last week. Do I think the Edmonton Oilers are a better team if Connor McDavid scores 170 points or 120 points? I think they're a better team if he scores 120 points because they're playing a different style of hockey. And I think they're buying into that, and you'll hear that from Leon Draisaitl. I think they're the best team in the Pacific because I think that Vegas is going to have a little bit of a Stanley Cup hangover. And I'm also worried about their goaltending. It was fine for the playoffs. It's a 28-game run at most. You have to replicate that three times over the regular season. Tough to do. Right? Not the same intensity from your defense, not the same intensity in your own end. There's going to be nights that are going to be nights that are off for the team, and the goalie's going to have to bail him out. And I would argue that if Jack Campbell plays anywhere like he has this preseason, the Edmonton Oilers have better goaltending than the Vegas Golden Knights. So I think they're the best team. I actually think Vegas is going to finish third behind LA. I really like what LA has done. But then when you get to the playoffs, it's going to be all about Vegas again because they're built for the playoffs. So I think Edmonton's going to be great, and it will come down to what they are in the playoffs. But I think they have a belief now that this regular season is going to be about building to the playoffs.
Isn't it interesting that in this division that we're talking about, the Pacific Division, the teams with the best goaltending, you're talking about probably Vancouver with Demko, bubble team, Calgary with Markstrom, bubble team, and Anaheim with Gibson, which is not a playoff team. I mean, Vegas, even though as good as Adin Hill was last year and as good as Logan Thompson was before he got hurt, it's still a kind of, let's see you do it again, and let's see you do it in the regular season, and let's see you do it 50 times, right? Edmonton, same thing. Questions with Skinner, questions with Campbell. LA, questions in net. I mean, they have obvious questions in net. Talbot and Phoenix Copley. Seattle, Grubauer, stay healthy, okay. I mean, he's a good goalie. We know that. Probably a little more proven than the other ones. But there's questions in net with all four of those teams. You don't have necessarily those questions with Calgary and Vancouver, the other two teams you would consider, you know, in the playoff mix there. So somebody's going to have to step up among those teams, but it's going to be more than just goaltending for teams like Vegas and Edmonton. And that's the concern I have with Edmonton, is getting more than just that, you know, getting more than McDavid and Draisaitl. It's less of a concern for me with a team like Vegas.
Yeah. But I also think if, and this is why I'm on the Calgary bandwagon, I think if Markstrom plays like he did last year, they're in a ton of trouble again, but I don't think he's going to. I think there are questions in Calgary, which Markstrom's going to show up. I think the one that was a Vezina Trophy candidate is going to show up after a really bad year. A lot of players had a really bad year last year for Calgary, and you know, you're looking for some bounce back from Huberto, from Uyghur. I think it's Markstrom more than anybody. He's going to drive what that team is, and I think he's going to be what he was 2 years ago.
I don't know. I think if he's somewhere in between, they're certainly a bubble team. If he's what he was as a Vezina Trophy candidate, they're a playoff team. We'll see where it goes there. But we teased it enough. Leon Draisaitl joined us. We talked a lot about the Oilers, their motivation, losing last year in the playoffs. Here's that interview with Leon Draisaitl. So, Leon, thanks for joining us. This, you know, is an interesting thing that I saw. You guys all went back to Edmonton early, almost as a team, right? Like, it was like everybody. Usually guys will trickle in. Yet you guys were all there 2 weeks before training camp opens, and it was like go time from there. What does that tell you about your team, the leadership that you guys, you and Connor have, and what is at stake?
I think it just shows me that we're all committed, you know? We're all in the same boat. We all want the same thing. We all strive for the same goal. You know, I think we got a really tight group. We added some really good pieces, and you know, everyone's excited to be back and be back early and find our way early. So you know, starts are obviously key in the NHL. So yeah, we're just excited to be together again and be working.
The end of the season obviously was a disappointment, but you ended up playing the eventual Stanley Cup champions, and you played them even through four games. Can you measure the disappointment or counter the disappointment with the knowledge of exactly how close you are?
Yeah, I think we're very close. You know, I think we didn't find our best hockey when it mattered most in the last two games, and eventually that, you know, that cost us the playoffs. You know, I think we were definitely able to beat any team, Vegas as well. But at the end, they just played a little better than us in certain moments, and that's the difference right there. But you learn from it, you move on. We got to make sure that we learn from it and you know, bring whatever we have learned into next year and into this season.
I don't even know if this if you can answer this question, but do you feel like you're closer now than you were at this time last year?
I mean, everyone is equally as far away from it right now.
And that makes sense.
I think knowledge-wise and experience-wise, we're a better team, yeah. You know, again, little things that cost us, you know, moving on, and those are the things that we need to, you know, mature in and move on from and learn from. And, you know, I think we got the right pieces in the group to do that.
When you started practice this year, they made you available one of the first days. And in the course of that conversation, you said, look, we know how to win in this league. We need to learn how to not lose, which I think is a great quote. But what does that mean for you guys? How does that exhibit itself?
Well, I think we're, again, I mean that with everything I have, I think we're maybe the best team in the league at very clearly beating a team. And we can outplay any team in the league. I think for us, sometimes it's a little too much go, 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 and trying to force a win, where sometimes you need to let the other team make mistakes and you capitalize on it, right? It's just being a little more mature and maybe a little more patient in a way. We approach the game, and that's something that you know, we can improve on, and if we do that, I think we're going to be a hard team to beat.
It's interesting, right? We're sitting here in September talking about, are you close? And you had a great answer. You're like, look, we're as far away as every other team. It's a long journey to get to where you want to go. What's the expectation right now? The long-term expectation, I know. But what's your short-term goal?
Short-term expectations are to have a good camp and get off to a really good start. You know, we want to find our game early. We want to be a hard team to play against early on. Come out of the gates, you know, with you know, playing really good hockey. And that's the short-term expectation. And you move on from there. You go from month to month and segments to segments and evolve as a team and get better as a team. And, you know, eventually that'll show you where you end up.
When you were here last year and the series was 2-1 or 2-2, I don't remember where it was, you had such an incredible start to this round of the playoffs, the second round of the playoffs. I think it was after the 4-goal game, Connor McDavid said on some nights, if not most nights, you could be the best player in the league. And everybody considers him the best player in the league. What was it like to hear that? And does that fuel you even more that he would say that you're in that conversation with him?
I mean, I don't know if it fuels me. I don't know if it needs to fuel me. I know what I'm capable of. And I know how highly Connor thinks of me. And that goes both directions, obviously. But it's always nice to hear from someone that has already accomplished so much and, you know, is the best player in the world and, you know, breaks record after record. And his names are up there with, you know, seemingly no one can even get there. Yeah, so it's nice to hear, of course, but not trying to be arrogant, but nothing that I didn't know or not I'm not aware of. I know very well what I'm capable of. I know when I'm not good. I'm very clear in understanding my game, and I'm very critical of my own game.
10 years, right, for you? Ten years? Is this flying?
Yeah, it is. It's crazy. It's it sounds like such a long time, but it felt like a couple of years or a couple of months. So, it's definitely flying by. So just trying to make the most of it.
Does it create a sense of urgency for you? Because it does seem to go like a snap of a finger.
Yeah. You know, these are the years that are most important, you know, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, we missed the playoffs. Like the urgency isn't as high as it is now to win, and that's the ultimate goal, and that's the only thing left for us to do, really, as a team. And there's definitely some urgency, but, you know, I'm 27. It's not like I'm 37. So Connor's 26. Not like he's 38. So we're in a really good spot, and we need to be aware of that and just make sure we improve and, you know, eventually hopefully we'll be the last team standing.
I know you stayed in North America a little longer than normal. You talked about improving. What did you work on this summer to improve?
Just my entire game. You know, just skating with really good players is always you know, a plus, and you know, the pace and you know, having that pace throughout the entire summer is really big, and just rounding out my full game.
When did you get over last season? How long did it take?
I can't remember, but probably a month and a half later than this year.
No, I mean, just like in terms of the mental, like getting past that and understanding look, everybody's got to move on. Everybody who is not raising that Stanley Cup has to move on. Like, were you able to, was it a process for you? Because you, like you said, we're close, you know?
No, I mean, I love playing hockey and I want to win. It's very, yeah, very simple. It's, I want to get better. I want to skate with Connor. You know, I want to skate with Hyman. I want to skate with Nurse. I want to skate with the best players in the world. And, that's an easy decision for me. And, you know, obviously on top of that, most importantly, I want to win and give my team the best chance to do that. And, I thought it was the right decision.
You guys are hosting the outdoor game this year, the Heritage Classic, 20 years after the first one that started this whole wave. Two questions. One, did you play a lot of outdoors in Germany? And two, when did you become aware of kind of this outdoor phenomenon and now you're a part of the legacy of the biggest game that's ever played?
Yeah, growing up in Germany, played a little bit outdoor, nothing crazy. Played on the pond a little bit, a couple rinks that were semi-outside, so definitely played outside a little bit. And to your second question, yeah, I mean, obviously you hear about it, you learn about it, but it probably wasn't until a couple years into my NHL career I started to realize how big these games are. You watch them on TV, and I've been lucky enough to be a part of one myself already, so very excited for it. Should be a great night.
Are you glad that it's not going to be as cold as that first one was?
I sure hope it's not going to be. I heard it was cold.
Are you a player that feels the crowd and gets pumped up by the intros? Like, I sit there in a press box and I'm just like, I can't imagine what it's like to forget about 60,000 seat stadium or 70,000 seat stadium, just 18, 19, 20,000 seat arena. Like, the place is dark, the lights are going on, you guys run at, skate out there. Do you get pumped by that?
Yeah, I think everyone kind of has their own little, mechanisms and their own little rituals and whatnot. But for me, it's more like internally, I get excited about, my butterflies get going, and just get excited about playing the game. And for me, it's not like I'm screaming around. It's more like internally, I'm like a little kid, waiting to get out and playing hockey. So, yeah.
Do you still get nervous?
There's moments, yeah, for sure. But nervous. I get more nervous watching other teams play, the night before game one in the playoffs, watching the other teams kick off the playoffs, watching overtime, watching other teams play overtime. I get more nervous there than playing it myself, because, you can do something about it. Right?
Yeah, why does that make you nervous? I mean, you have
no. I don't know. I can't explain it. I have nothing to do with them. I, quite frankly, don't really care about them.
Yeah.
But it's just, I've always been that way. Like, I've been, very fortunate with injuries throughout my career, but I've watched a couple games from the press box, and it's the worst day for me. So, hate watching, just love being a part of it.
It's like driving versus being a passenger.
Right, same thing, yeah, pretty much.
So I know you worked hard. We've been over this. What was fun this summer?
Everything. The working hard was fun. The grinding was fun. The traveling was fun. Everything was good. It was a great summer all around.
There was nothing that stood out, vacation or anything like that?
Yeah, vacationing, yeah. It was great. A couple nice trips with family and friends. And it was all around a really good summer.
Do you, that is one way. I was going to ask you, what do you do to decompress? Do you decompress during the season even?
Not so much during the season, probably more in the off season. Sometimes during the season, there's certain nights where you just try to shut your brain off a little bit, maybe don't watch hockey, but just love hockey. I love watching it, and yeah.
Do you watch a lot? Do you watch a lot on nights when you're not playing? I mean, you talked about getting nervous, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But
I do. I love watching hockey. Yeah, I love watching other teams. I love watching, the best players in the world go at it. So definitely watch a lot of hockey.
Do you watch it casually or actively?
I think a little bit of both. Some nights it's casually, and sometimes it's, trying to pick something up from certain players or see something different from in terms of systems or power play or penalty kill, whatever it is. So it's a little bit of both.
There's more German players coming into the league now. Are you paying attention to them?
Yeah, for sure. I like watching them. A couple really good young players that look really good. Hopefully they can continue to get better, and there's more kids coming.
It's one. I think I asked you about this last year too, but I want to ask you again. You ask some of them, like I talked recently with J.J. Paterka, or you ask some of them, and they're like, they look up to you. Like, you're that guy now that they look up to. You were, I'm sure, at some point looking up to somebody. What is it like to be that guy?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I feel like I'm still young, So, but at the same time, it's a big honor. It's a privilege, for younger German kids to say that about me. And I don't take that for granted, or I don't take that lightly. And do my best to, help these kids and you know, hopefully one day they can do what I've done in the league and maybe even better.
Good stuff there from Leon Draisaitl, who, I'll tease this, is my Hart Trophy pick for this season. We're not doing trophy trackers to start the season. We're doing roundtables that are on NHL.com, and we'll be doing one for a lot of the different trophies. But I like Leon Draisaitl for the Hart Trophy this year. Just pointing that out. We'll talk a little bit trophies in a sec. But, Sean, we did a lot on the Pacific, so let's do a little bit on the Central now, too. The Stanley Cup champions are coming out of the Central Division, by the way.
Okay, well, I guess I don't need to say anything. You can move on to the next. You can move on to the next point.
I mean, you can say you can disagree with me. You can give some points on why you may disagree with me, as wrong as they may be.
Well, I don't disagree with you because the Stanley Cup champion is coming out of the Central Division.
Oh, okay, all right, here we go.
But it's not the Dallas Stars. It's the Colorado Avalanche.
Listen, that absolutely could happen. Okay. They are good. They had a lot of injuries last season. Cale Makar, is he healthy or not healthy at the start of this season? I don't think it's necessarily going to impact the Avalanche too much. They're a playoff team. They could finish first in this division. They're that good. Their goaltending looked really good last year with Georgiev. But I wonder about their depth and their ability to run the table again with the depth that they have versus what I like from the depth and the style of play I see from the Dallas Stars, a team that has a first line that can also act as a checking line, a guy like Roope Hintz, who could be a Selke Trophy guy as your first line center, Jason Robertson, who could be a Rocket Richard guy, but also really strong defensively, strong 200-foot game, and Joe Pavelski, who's done it year after year after year. Heiskanen could be a Norris Trophy guy. Ottinger could be a Vezina Trophy guy. There's a lot to like there in terms of what I'm talking about in terms of the regular season, but I just like the way their style is and how it could fit for playoff hockey a little bit more right now than the Avalanche. And maybe if the Avalanche had Gabriel Landeskog, my thought would be different, but they're not going to have Gabriel Landeskog this season again. And that's kind of what's swaying me here with Dallas.
They don't have Gabriel Landeskog. They still have Nathan MacKinnon. They still have Mikko Rantanen. They might have the best defense in the National Hockey League, 1-6.
I don't think anybody would be surprised if it's the Avalanche that go all the way, right? It wouldn't surprise me. Its injuries hurt them last year, and if they had run into any injury issues this year, I just don't love the depth. I don't think it's there. You're also asking a lot of a guy like Ryan Johansson, who's coming off of a major injury, to recreate what he did a couple of years ago. Can he do that again? You're asking a lot of Ross Colton to, you know, play a third line center role, more of a prominent third line is not, you know, first line or second line, but it seems like he would be having a little bit more of a prominent role in Colorado than he had in Tampa Bay. Can he do that? All I'm saying is I have more questions about the Avalanche and fewer about the Dallas Stars. We're debating this on October 5th. They won't hand this trophy out until middle of June. So we'll see where it goes. A lot is obviously going to change. But the fact that we're just talking about these two teams right now, Sean, kind of tell our listeners a little bit about what we think right now of this Central Division, because the third team I have in is the Minnesota Wild, but I don't have any other teams in. You have Nashville that you like. Okay, they're fine, but they're bubble. St. Louis is bubble, right? I mean, Chicago, no. Arizona is going to be better, but I don't think they're ready for it. You know, so Winnipeg took a hit. I think they're going to take more of a hit, regardless of where they are around the trade deadline. I think unless they're blowing everybody out, I think they're going to take more of a hit to redo it there. It shows a little bit of where this division's at right now.
Yeah, it's probably the most top-heavy division in the league. You know, you're going to wonder about all those teams. I'm going to wonder about Minnesota the whole time. Like, I like that Minnesota team. I like what Billy Guerin, their GM, has built over there. I think Kaprizov is a complete difference maker. Their two-headed goalie situation can be a benefit. I think sometimes it's a hindrance. You know, they have some really nice pieces, but are they in the class of the other two teams in that division? And the answer is no.
They really can't be. There's $14 million tied on their cap that's tied up to two players who are not there in Ryan Suter and Zach Parise. So it's almost unfair.
Look, Dan, I don't know if Minnesota had their top, if they had their $83 million that they can compete with these two teams. I think they're the class of the Central. They're head and shoulders above anybody else that's in that division. They're among the best teams in the league. We just talked about Vegas, the Stanley Cup champions. I think there's a team or two in the East that could probably battle against them. I mean, we each talked about the Stanley Cup champion coming out of this division. So if that's the case, then it really doesn't matter how good Minnesota is.
Well, it's also one of those situations where you just got to get in and you find out. And I think they are the third team in because I just don't trust the other teams right now. I don't see enough from those other teams in this division to believe that they can contend over the Wild right now, even with the, some of the shortfalls that the Wild have, including at number one center, where they're still searching for that guy at number one center. One of those teams in this division, though, is the Chicago Blackhawks, Sean. And obviously, Connor Bedard is the story there. He will be all year long. He's probably, I don't know, but you can tell me, among our writers at NHL.com, he's probably an overwhelming pick to be a Calder Trophy guy. But I think it's asking so much of him to do everything that is expected of him in year one. It's not a good team. They're not supposed to be a good team this year. They have a lot of issues and they'll be better. He's looked dynamic at times, you know, in the preseason. And that is, those flashes are going to come out throughout the regular season. And he's going to be a superstar. If he isn't already, he's going to have a great career. But are we asking too much of Connor Bedard this year to be the number one center on a National Hockey League team that's not supposed to be a playoff team, Calder Trophy winner, all of that stuff, plus to live with all the hype that he has, all the media attention he's going to get? I mean, heck, opening night's Tuesday. He's going to be in Pittsburgh playing against Sidney Crosby on ESPN. Hello, welcome to the National Hockey League, Connor Bedard, right? Is it asking too much? Because I think it might be. And that's why I'm not saying he's a Calder Trophy guy. I think he's a really good candidate. But I looked at a guy like Luke Hughes with the New Jersey Devils and, you know, insulated a little bit more there and has an opportunity to be a breakout guy. What do you think? Is it asking too much of Bedard?
No, it's not asking too much. That doesn't mean that I think he's going to win the award. He is an overwhelming favorite amongst our staff. You know, we do a Calder Trophy roundtable that'll run later this week. You know, and Luke Hughes is in it, but I think if you polled our whole staff, that it would be 80 to 85% saying that Connor Bedard is going to win it. He's got a built-in advantage, right? If it's close, he wins because of all the hype and everything else that's gone on. But I don't think it's too much to ask because that's what special players do. You think about Connor McDavid and when he came into the league with the Edmonton Oilers, like, not a very good team. He was still special. Sidney Crosby, not a very good team. That's why these teams have the number one pick. They're not good teams. And he came in pretty special. I think that's what that caliber of player does. There's nothing that's led me to believe that he's not that caliber of player, but I think this is a really strong class. I think, you know, you mentioned Luke Hughes. He got a little bit of seasoning last year. He's a guy that could do that. It's generally more difficult for a defenseman to do it. You know, if the Buffalo Sabres are going to be any good this year, good rookie goalies get a lot of attention when it comes to Calder Trophy voting, just because it's such an important position, and it's so rare for a rookie to do well. And then, you know, you look at there's going to be surprises that come out, kind of like a Wyatt Johnson last year for the Dallas Stars. You know, nobody expected that from him. You know, could that be Fantilli if he stays all year with Columbus? Could that be Leo Carlson if he stays all year with Anaheim? I mean, it's a little unfair because you don't know if they're going to make that 9-game cutoff. But once they do, you can have this conversation again and have a completely different conversation, I think.
You had mentioned Sean Connor Bedard and him being special. And there's no question he is. He's going to be special. He is special, just like Crosby, just like McDavid. He's in that class. He will be. But he's also very humble. Those guys were too. He's going into this season, I would say, wide-eyed, maybe a little bit blind, but kind of understanding of what's to come. We spoke to him at Player Media Tour, and he addressed that.
You obviously train as hard as you can and try to prepare yourself as best you can, but in a league you've never played in, you don't really know what to expect. It's hard to mentally prepare, I guess. You just kind of got to go in there and give it your all and try to do the best you can. So, I think it's all going to be kind of new territory, but I'm excited.
yeah, it's going to be new territory for him. And that's, it's not as new. It's new for a lot of guys. It's new for Leo Carlson. It's new for Adam Fantilli. Devin Levi had a little bit of a taste of it. Luke Hughes got a little bit of a taste of it. Some of these other guys, you know, so would I be surprised if Connor Bedard goes and wins the Calder Trophy this year? No, that'd be crazy to be surprised by that. Do I think, am I picking him? No. Do I think he will? No. I think it's asking a lot.
I don't think it's asking too much. And I think the most important thing he said was that it's exciting. And it is exciting. You talked about opening night against Sidney Crosby. Like, that's a must-see moment. Every time he plays, it's going to be a must-see moment, right? He goes into Boston a couple of nights later. It's another game that you want to see against a really elite original six team. And then the home opener and then the first game against Connor McDavid. There's this narrative that's going to go on throughout the year. And look, I hope he's amazing. Like, that's what we all want. Like, you want your superstars to be superstars. It's the best thing for everybody involved. It's the best thing for Chicago. It's the best thing for the NHL. It's the best thing for the player. Are there going to be bumps in the road? I am sure there are. And are there unreal expectations and unreasonable expectations? I'm sure there are. But I think Connor Bedard is going to meet more of the expectations than fall short.
I guess I'm just tempering those expectations right now. I'm trying to help the kid, if you will, right? I mean, somebody's got to do it. But Sean, you also mentioned Devin Levi. I brought him up as well. The Buffalo Sabres, if they're going to be a playoff team this year, it could come down to Devin Levi. And if they are, maybe that's Devin Levi's the Calder Trophy for the Rookie of the Year. Do you think the Sabres are a playoff team this year?
I do. I think they're a wild card team. I have them as the first wild card. I think we're at a point now where there's no more room for error, right? Like, there's no more excuses. There's no more next years. There's no more of any of that other than the fact that their goaltending is unsettled and they're trying to choose from three guys, which is never an ideal situation for a playoff team. But I feel like they've learned their lessons. They have a coach that can certainly get them there. They have the talent to do it. I mean, they have elite players now at every position except for goaltending. And I think they've improved more than the other teams that are chasing them. And, you know, we've talked on this podcast a lot about Florida. You know, I think that the injuries that they have and the hits to the depth that they've taken, especially on the blue line, is going to make qualifying a very difficult proposition, if not impossible. And I'm not saying that the loss of Andre Vasilevsky for Tampa Bay is going to knock that team out of the playoffs, but it certainly makes the first couple of months of the season a little more interesting, and it will allow some teams to build a cushion on that team. I actually still think Tampa gets in, and I have them in the Stanley Cup final because Vasi's going to be rested and healthy, you hope, and they're a dangerous team at that point.
Absolutely. They could be a very dangerous team at that point. They got to get to that point. I have them in the playoffs too. Originally, I had them third in the Atlantic Division and Buffalo as a wild card. I flopped it. I flipped it basically because of the situation with Vasilevsky. And it's you're looking at the Buffalo Sabres and you're like, the question there obviously is in goal. They have three guys right now and Levi, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and Erik Komrie have combined for 100 games played. That's more than Tampa has right now, at least for the first 2 months of the season, with Jonas Johansson, their leader, at 35 games played and not really all that stellar either, right? So that's why I flipped it. I think the Lightning get in, but they're not going to be able to bank those points that they want to bank early in the season, as many of those points as they want to bank early in the season, because this is not the same as losing Kucherov for the season. This is not the same as not having Stamkos in the playoffs, as we've seen them survive both situations, right? This is their backbone. He's the guy who's always been there. He plays the most important position, and he plays it better than anybody else in the National Hockey League, better than anybody else in the world, probably. And now he's out, and you don't have a guy who's a suitable replacement for him. I mean, you don't have an NHL veteran guy. They could get one. That could change, but nobody's going to be this guy. And that's what I wrote when when Vasilevskiy went down was just that this is so different. This is the biggest regular season test for the Lightning, and I flipped it and I went Buffalo for that reason as third in that division. Toronto, Boston were the top two teams for me.
Ottawa in or out?
Ottawa out, and that's the hardest one I've had to do. Honestly, it's the hardest one I had to do. There's a lot of optimism and expectation in Ottawa. We had Brady Tkachuk on last week. He's got all that. And I love Brady Tkachuk as a player and as a leader. I like a lot of that team, but I also sense some turbulence there, right? There's turbulence up top. New owner brought in Steve Staios to move ahead of Pierre Dorion, their GM. What's his future? Is a slow start going to be the narrative in Ottawa? Will it impact Dorion? Will it impact DJ Smith? Shane Pinto remains unsigned. Josh Norris, is he really healthy and ready to go after coming back from his injury? There's some more turbulence there in Ottawa that made me a little bit leery going into these predictions to say, all right, they're a playoff team, whereas there's less turbulence in Buffalo. And if I'm going to trust a team to overcome something and get in, it's Tampa. And so that's another reason why I don't quite think Detroit's there and ready yet. Close, but I don't quite think they're there and ready yet. Whereas Ottawa is right on that cusp, but with the turbulence there, it lent me to go in a different direction. It was a hard call, though.
Yeah, no, it was hard, and I think Ottawa's going to be Buffalo last year. They're going to miss by the slightest of margins, and that's going to be the end of the missing. Like, they have one more year of growing pains to go, and then they're going to be amongst that core group that we talk about being in the playoffs for several years in a row.
The question then becomes, is DJ Smith going to be the coach, and is Pierre Dorion going to be the GM when they do? You know, if it's not this year, and they've had some really slow starts, you know, the past few seasons. If that happens again, they may not last beyond Thanksgiving, U.S. Thanksgiving, right? I mean, that's the turbulence I'm talking about. What about Pittsburgh, though? Let's flip it over to the Metro. Do you buy Pittsburgh as a team that returns to the playoffs this season after missing last season for the first time since 2006?
Wholeheartedly. Again, elite talent up front. Hungry elite talent up front, Letang and Carlson on the back end. Like, that's your whole thing right there, as long as they stay healthy. Their power play at that point, you would think, would be in Edmonton range for lethality. Their goaltending only needs to be ordinary.
And he can be extraordinary. That's the thing. Like, Tristan Jarry can be really good.
Yeah.
He just seems to get hurt, number one, and gets hurt at the worst times, too, right? I mean, his timing for when he gets injured is brutal, and it kills the team. It happened last year. It happened the year before. If he can stay healthy and give him 55 to 60 starts, I think they are a playoff team, because like you said, they got everything else. They do. They're a team much like Toronto, much like Edmonton. They're going to be able to outscore some of their problems at times. Are they a Stanley Cup contending team once they get in? I guess you would have to say yes, because they're in, but they're not a team I would pick based on how they look right now, just because we know the game changes a little bit in the playoffs. But to get in, yeah, I got them in. But Sean, let's go through this. Toronto, I assume you have in, right?
Yeah.
Boston, Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Tampa, you have them all in. Carolina, the Rangers, and the Devils all in. Did we have the same eight teams in?
I think we did, so we should probably end this podcast because we agree on something. Let me just make sure that I don't have something different.
I think you got it all. I think we're the same.
I think we're the same, except I have the Rangers as a two wild card.
All right, so let's talk about them before we get out of here, okay? They have not looked good in the preseason. They just haven't. Jonathan Quick has not looked good in the preseason either, and I do question if he's even going to be a backup goalie for them come around Christmas time. Something could change there. But they have not looked good, and you've got Peter Laviolette after a game on Saturday against the Islanders really kind of laying it out there and questioning their work ethic, you know, in games and talking about how it's not systems, it's fact-checking. That's not a system thing. That's a work thing. You know, it's those types of things are already creeping in here, but I still think the Rangers, talent-wise, I have them number two in the division behind Carolina. I think the Devils take a little bit of a drop back, only because they played so far over their heads last season. So they take a little bit of a drop back. I have the Rangers at number two behind Carolina. I think they figure it out. I think they're working through some issues here under Peter Laviolette. New systems, trying to figure out who plays with who, right wing, left wing situation, all that stuff. They'll figure it out, and I think they're going to be just fine. But if work ethic is still in question 2 weeks from now, Sean, we have the New York Rangers have a big problem.
But I don't even know if it's work ethic. I mean, look, Peter Laviolette wants to see more. He's a new coach. He wants to light a fire under his team. I think it's team speed. And I think the Devils expose that. And then you look at Carolina, they're a really, really fast team. So I think sometimes when you're slow, you look lazy. You can't cover it up. You're not moving. So therefore, you're like, look at that dude. He's lazy. He's not getting back on the back check. What if he can't get back on the back check because he's not fast enough? What if the team's not fast enough? And I do think if you're already and they're such a veteran team that I think sometimes work ethic is in a concern because there's not that fire. Like, especially now, why do I have to work hard in the preseason? I know what I have. I know what my role is. I know what my job is. There's not a lot of push from the bottom. There's not a lot of questions about this team. And that can be a bad thing sometimes.
Right. There are not a lot of jobs that are up. There's like no jobs that are up for grabs with the Rangers. I mean, you've got younger guys, Will Cooley, Brennan Othman, who are pushing. But part of the team speed, I think, is fair to question. And they added a guy like Blake Wheeler, who's not, and Nick Bonino. I mean, they're not exactly talking fleet of foot guys here. But they can play the system that Laviolette wants them to play. They can go straight. They can go up and down the ice. They can do those things. They can pressure. They can forecheck and keep pucks in the zone. They can do those things. It's about puck movement, moving it quickly. But the work ethic part of it. So I say, I agree. Team speed, I think, is fair to question with the Rangers. The work ethic part, it's some guys like a veteran team, like you're saying, like they kind of just go at their own pace in the preseason. That's why I'm not even thinking about that right now. I'm thinking more along the lines of 2-3 weeks from now. If that's still popping up, that's coming off of last season too, which it was also questioned. And now it's more of a cultural thing than it is just a guy's getting ready for the season. And that could really put the Rangers in a hole. But let's not forget they do have Igor Shesterkin too, who he wants to be the happy Igor this year. I wrote about that. He's among the best goalies in the league. They have stability. They have elite talent. They have depth. So if they can make it all work and play the system that Laviolette wants to play, I see nothing that can slow them down this season, for lack of a better term, when you're questioning the team speed.
Well, I think that's what's going to slow them down, and that's why I have them right on the bubble. I just think there's a lot. I think the Devils put down the blueprint. You want to beat the New York Rangers? Here's how you beat them. And I think there's a lot of teams in this league that can do what the Devils did. I think that's what this league is now. I think you skate a team into the ground. There's a lot of teams that can skate the New York Rangers into the ground.
Yeah. It's a fair question to bring up about the Rangers. And it's something we might be talking about later on down the road if it does come true. And I'll give you all the credit for it because you brought it up. But I mean, it's not something that I can disagree with, that element of their game. So listen, it'll be interesting to see. We do have all eight of the same teams in the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. We disagree a little bit in the West, but to have all eight, Sean, I mean, you and I agreeing this way on October 5th, is that a good sign or a bad sign?
I think it's a sign of the apocalypse, but we didn't get to the most important part, Dan.
Which is?
Who's Dallas beating?
I think it's Carolina. I think Carolina gets through, and I'll say this further. I think it's Kochetkov in net for them. That's the one to me. He's the best goalie that they have. They have Freddie Anderson, they have Antti Raanta, and they have Pyotr Kochetkov. And Kochetkov is the 24-year-old who is their best goaltender. He may start the season in the American Hockey League. Or they're not going to start the season with three goalies, I don't think. So they could put Raanta on waivers. I don't know that they want to do that. The easy move is to put Kochetkov down in the AHL. They do not have an AHL affiliate right now, so he'll have to go somewhere. He's waiver exempt. He doesn't require waivers, so it's an easy send down to the AHL. But at the end of the day, I think he's their best goalie, and he's the one that's going to carry them into the playoffs and deep into the playoffs this season because he's the most talented of the three.
So you have Dallas, Carolina.
I do.
And I have Colorado, Tampa Bay. Yeah, rematch.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll take either one of those. Yeah, I mean, listen, the Tampa Bay one is interesting because you're right. in the sense of Vasilevskiy will be healthy. He's not going to have as much mileage on him this season. They themselves don't. They were able to, you know, to stop a little bit at the end of last season and get a longer off season about that too. That's going to help them as well. But it's going to be a fight and it's going to be a struggle at the start of the season. And I think they're going to expend a lot of energy there at the start of the season just to overcome the loss of a guy like Vasilevskiy. To then have it all in the tank for them in the playoffs is going to be a lot to ask. Whereas a team like Carolina with their depth, I can see them kind of just not coasting, but rolling through the regular season as a top three team in that division, understanding it doesn't really matter where they finish in that division as a top three team. They have the depth. They have the talent. They have the goaltending. They don't have the elite scorer, but you do have a lot of guys that you can go to score, and they're going to add an Andrei Vasilevskiy, this Andrei Svechnikov this season too, who was not there for them last season.
Yeah, I just think Tampa Bay plays a system that they can survive missing their goalie for 10 weeks. If he doesn't come back as the same goalie, then it's a different question. And I also think there's a fire there. Their window is closing. Hedman knows it. Kucherov knows it. They all know it. So there's no excuses. Just go and get it. And I think this will bring them closer together as they come together to kind of survive what is a brutal blow to them. So I think they will actually learn to be a better team through this.
Yeah, it might have to be John Cooper's best coaching job in the National Hockey League. And he's had a really good National Hockey League coaching career. He's done a lot of really good things. To overcome this might have to be his best one. So we'll see how it goes. But it all starts on Tuesday night. Triple header on ESPN. I'll be in Vegas. Looking forward to it. Can't wait. Vegas, Seattle, opening night. The banner goes up at T-Mobile Arena. It's almost here, finally.
Yeah, by the time everybody listens next week, we'll have regular season games to talk about and more exciting storylines to explore. So have a good trip to Vegas, and we'll talk next week.
Thank you very much, and enjoy the hockey.